Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, October 22nd, 2014. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, Republican Superintendent of Public Instruction candidate Sherry Ibarra degree claims questioned. Idaho Fish and Game wants to solve Latah County poaching. Whitman County candidates face off in League of Women Voters of Pullman Forum, and we'll have a preview interview with David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, who is appearing at a Radio Free Moscow 10th birthday celebration event tomorrow night at the 1912 Center. So stay tuned for more. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. University of Idaho spokesperson Andrea Barlow has told the Spokesman Review website Republican Superintendent of Public Instruction candidate Sherry Ibarra received a specialist educational degree at the school, not a doctorate, as Ibarra has publicly claimed during the campaign. Ibarra campaign spokesperson Melinda Northern told the paper the candidate had hoped to earn a doctorate by August, but changed her program and applied some of her doctorate credits towards the specialist degree. Northern said there was no intentional misrepresentation, and Ibarra is still enrolled and working towards her doctorate. Former State Superintendent of Public Instruction Jerry Evans told the paper there's a big difference between an educational specialist degree and a doctorate. Evans, who only has an educational specialist degree, said the biggest difference is the doctorate requires research. He said the specialist degree is required to become a superintendent in a school district. Ibarra is running against Democrat Jana Jones in the race to replace Republican Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Luna. Jones has a doctorate in education from Idaho State University. According to the Spokesman Review, at the University of Idaho, those receiving an educational specialist degree must earn 30 credits above a master's degree, but those earning a doctorate in education must complete 53 more credits, exams, and a dissertation. During a debate on Idaho Public Television last night, Ibarra said she had support from the legislature's powerful budget-writing Joint Finance Appropriations Committee. Jones questioned that, and Ibarra said, "I'm sorry that my opponent is misinformed and she's been gone so long that she doesn't know who JFAC is, but they are listed on my website and they most certainly do support me." Ibarra's website only lists two members of the 20-member bipartisan JFAC committee as supporters of her campaign. Jones replied during the debate, "I do know what JFAC is. I've actually testified in front of JFAC several times, and not every member of JFAC is on your website." At a Whitman County Candidates Forum sponsored by the Pullman League of Women Voters, incumbent candidate for assessor Joe Reynolds and his challenger, Chief Appraiser Jim Hawks, discounted allegations of tension in the assessor's office, where Reynolds has admitted people talk nasty at times. Reynolds pointed out he had prevailed in a lawsuit this year filed by an employee who alleged sexual harassment, and Hawks said the topic should be off the table. Reynolds denied an accusation by Hawks that he intended to step down as soon as he was elected to allow for an appointment of a replacement. Hawks said he had the information from a high-ranking public official. Sheriff's candidates incumbent Brett Myers and challenger Adam Eisenberg disagreed over qualifications, with Eisenberg emphasizing his experience as a security guard and Myers standing by his record of 12 years serving as sheriff. Eisenberg, however, accused Myers of failing to serve the community and not upholding the Constitution and state laws, especially in regard to marijuana laws. Eisenberg said he would work to stop racial discrimination in drug enforcement cases and focus on property crimes, since those crimes are usually associated with drug use. Myers agreed with the connection between drug and property crimes, but said the full impact of the legalization of marijuana remains to be seen. In a discussion about Initiative I-1351, which would mandate minimum class sizes in Washington, Washington State University Professor Emeritus Don Orlick said he supports the idea, but without the fiscal analysis that says where the funding is going to come from. He can't support the initiative because of the burden it could place on small rural school districts. There are two gun initiatives on the Washington ballot. I-591 restricts the ability of government agencies to confiscate guns and prevents the legislature from passing stricter background checks than those required by federal law. Panelist and firearms advocate Ted Weatherly said he is a states' rights kind of guy and called the initiative a step backwards. Weatherly said its passage would make it easier for people who shouldn't have firearms to get them, while Joe Spoonmore, speaking in favor of the initiative, said people who are lawbreakers are going to break the laws. I-594 would require background checks for all firearms purchases, not just pistols, including firearms sold at gun shows, requirements that are stricter than the federal ones. Weatherly said that measure would promote safety. He said states with similar laws see fewer domestic violence murders and police officers killed. In opposition to the initiative, Spoonmore emphasized the budget impact its implementation would have. If both initiatives pass, it's likely the courts would have to decide how they would work together. The Idaho Department of Fish and Game is asking for citizen help in solving several poaching incidents in Latah County. Someone shot a 5-point bull elk and left it to rot on Green Loop Road near Genesee, and Conservation Officer Barry Cummings told the Daily News, "I'm sure that someone knows something about that." In another incident, a cow and bull elk were killed in a legal hunt by a hunter who shot them around dusk. Fish and Game officials say the hunter did not know he had hit the two animals until a landowner reported the dead animals near the 1,000 block of Brinken Road near Potlatch. Cummings also said the agency is following up on reports of people hunting from roadways. He noted it is unlawful for anyone to drive down a road looking for an animal to shoot. To submit information about poaching or other violations, people can call a 24-hour poaching hotline. The number is 800-632-5999. That's 800-632-5999. To speak directly with a Fish and Game official, the Idaho Department of Fish and Game Clearwater Region phone is 208-799-5010. That's 208-799-5010. The American Civil Liberties Union has filed a lawsuit on behalf of a Cassia County student alleging sexual and religious discrimination after Declo High School denied her a chance to run for student body president. School officials said the student, Sierra Norman, had taken too many online and dual credit courses and did not qualify to run in the election. Norman has taken advanced placement and college credit classes through the Idaho Digital Learning Academy. She told the Associated Press she wants to run for the office to enhance her applications to Ivy League colleges. According to the ACLU, the Cassia County School District lists Norman as a full-time student and receives state funding on that basis. Court documents also show the ACLU alleges a male student who is a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and dual enrolled in the LDS Seminary was allowed to circulate a petition in the school. The ACLU is asking for an independent investigation of policies that favor male students and members of the LDS Church, as well as a written apology and training on fair treatment for school officials. School district spokesperson Debbie Critchfield told the Associated Press the school board met in executive session with Norman and her parents. The parents asked the school to form committees to review policies that define who full-time students are. One of KRFP's 10th birthday events is tomorrow night with journalist and alternative radio host David Barsamian. At the fundraising event at 7 p.m. at the 1912 Center in Moscow, Barsamian will speak about the environment, capitalism, and the media. I caught up with David Barsamian by phone this afternoon. Here is that interview. One of the things that you were mentioning in a previous speech I listened to, that the free markets don't end up giving us economic justice. So you're going to talk a little bit about solutions, right?
Yes, indeed. And I think there are solutions out there if we think creatively and also emulate some very successful models, such as the Mondragon cooperative in Spain, in the Basque Country, which employs over 100,000 workers and consists of scores and scores of different types of enterprises. It started off with just a handful of farmers, and it has grown to be the seventh largest corporation in Spain. Now, I was just in the last few days in Bozeman, Montana, and I was delighted to come across a food co-op there that employs 170 people. It's very successful. They have a bakery. They have a couple of restaurants, grocery stores. So there seems to be a very slow but perceptible trend toward more and more cooperatives where workers have a say in what is produced, how it's produced, who gets paid, what, and what are the goals of the particular enterprise.
I would assume that people involved in cooperatives like this have to be very careful that the cooperatives themselves don't emulate the free market strategies and therefore damage the environment and justice and so forth as well.
Well, there isn't much of a free market in reality. The market relies heavily on government intervention. That means we the people, taxpayer bailouts. I think anyone listening to our voices will remember just a few years ago when some of the major banks and financial institutions and trading houses on Wall Street were bailed out by the taxpayers. Now, if we really had capitalism in this country, they would have been allowed to fail.
Okay. I want to move on to a little other subject, the media. You've mentioned that we have to deconstruct the so-called liberal media. And why is that?
Well, I'm not too worried about the right-wing media. I think there are plenty of people, that are focusing on them, such as Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting in New York and other media groups. They're a pretty easy target. I find much more subtle and pernicious is, in fact, the liberal media, the New York Times, National Public Radio's Morning Edition, and All Things Considered, PBS TV with Charlie Rose and the News Hour. These are considered very respectable, elite-oriented media, and in fact, many of the guests, many of the people interviewed in these media are, in fact, current or past government employees, high-ranking members of state, as well as so-called titans of industry, captains of industry. And because they are polite, they are smooth, they are suave, it can be very seductive. The liberal media can really hook people into thinking, well, there must be a solution. We've got to do something about Iran. We've got to do something about this or that particular issue without really interrogating and unearthing and decoupling the propaganda from reality.
I've noticed that a lot of the so-called liberal media seems to have this unwritten mission statement, get liberals to accept war, especially when the nation is gearing up for wars, which seems to be more and more often now.
Well, since the end of World War II in 1945, the year I was born, the U.S. has either been at war or is preparing for war or is operating under the threat of war. The U.S. empire has, extended its tentacles like a giant octopus across the globe. It has at least 735 bases outside the United States. It has thousands inside the United States. It's a very militarized economy. It's, in fact, it's one of the few sectors of the economy that's actually functioning. So the war machine, the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned the country about, is flourishing. And the more violence there is, and that translates into more weapon sales. The more weapon sales there are, it translates into more profits. So you have a kind of a reinforcing circle that supports violent alternatives, interventions, initiatives by Washington, as opposed to nonviolent diplomatic negotiations, which, of course, are not good for weapons sales.
Yeah, that never-ending circle seems to flow into my next question, which was going to be the role of the weapons industry and the security industry in the climate crisis.
Well, the Pentagon is the single largest polluter in the world per capita. However, it is not bound by any international treaty protocols when it comes to the environment. And so, you know, we don't have exact information, but it was very revealing that the Pentagon is very much aware of what is happening to the climate. There was a major front page story in the New York Times in the last couple of weeks where the Pentagon says that climate change will pose a threat to U.S. national security. So this is a very interesting development. Way back in the 70s, the Pentagon was one of the first agencies of any kind to note that there was something happening with the climate. They weren't quite sure about what it was, but there seemed to have been a warming trend even there, and the Pentagon said this is something we've got to keep our eye on, and certainly they're very aware of the rising temperatures, which will result in rising sea levels, which will imperil some of their major military bases. For example, in Virginia, there's a huge naval base there that could literally be impacted by rising waters.
Okay, finally, I wanted to ask, Moscow, Idaho, up until recently, with a new administration in our town, had a slogan, the heart of the arts, and now they are working on rebranding. I want to ask if, in your talk tomorrow, which touches on the environment, are you going to speak a little bit about the role of artists and poets in the environmental crisis?
Absolutely. In fact, I always integrate poetry in my presentations, and I also do a little bit of comedy as well, a little bit of a skit. I hope to perform that tomorrow. But I think, yeah, the arts play a central role in really enriching our lives and expanding our consciousness. And it's a different way of looking at things through the lens of the artist, through the creative eye, through the hand that writes, that produces novels and essays and powerful poems. So, you know, it could be Marge Piercy, it could be Pablo Neruda that I will talk about, it could be a Pakistani Urdu poet. I don't know which poems I'm going to read, but I'm certainly going to read some poems.
And I have been telling people about, even though that you touch on serious, very serious issues, and that's the theme of your talk, there's an integration of humor in that that should attract people to the event tomorrow.
I hope so. I'd love to see Moscow, Idaho residents turn out, support the radio station, and I take my cue from our dear comrade Howard Zinn, a wonderful radical historian who always used humor, even in the most dire kinds of circumstances. So I think, it does inject, a different energy into a presentation when there is humor.
Okay, David Barsamian, thank you very much.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to meeting everyone and talking about my new book with Noam Chomsky, Power Systems, and, I'd be happy to sign them for your attendees there.
That was alternative radio host David Barsamian speaking from Boulder, Colorado today, where he lives. Barsamian will be speaking at a KRFP 10th birthday event tomorrow night at the 1912 Center, 412 East 3rd Street in Moscow. The event begins at 7 p.m. KRFP has been broadcasting alternative radio for the entire 10 years of its existence. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. 80% chance of rain tonight, mainly after midnight, low 49. 80% chance of showers tomorrow, high 58. South winds. Southeast winds tonight, 10 to 15, gusting to 20. And south winds tomorrow, 10 to 15, becoming southwest in the afternoon with gusts up to 30 miles an hour. 60% chance of showers tomorrow night, mainly before midnight, mostly cloudy, low 46. Southwest winds 5 to 15, gusts up to 20, and partly sunny on Friday, high 58. Currently at the Pullman Moscow Regional Airport, we have overcast skies, 61 degrees. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on Radio Free Moscow, be sure to come to the David Barsamian event tomorrow night at 7 p.m. It's a fundraiser, and you can still buy tickets. The drawing will be tomorrow night for the JAMA Citizen 2 bicycle raffle that we're giving away. Coming up next, Between the Lines. Don't forget, at 6:30, stay tuned, because we will have a special candidates forum with candidates for Latah County Commission, Tom Lamar, and Shirley Green in the studios, taking your phone calls at 208-892-9200. It's 208-892-9200. Nancy Casey assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. KRFP, Moscow Pullman.